Beyond grace, Christian revelation teaches the mystery of the incarnation. What does this add in our training of the religious? He tells us that when God became man, he assumed human nature, but he remained a divine person. That this divine person is a source of all the grace that every human person needs to go in that fullness of himself for which we were created. Now this divine person is the pattern and model for every human person to imitate. So the more Christ-like we become, the more truly mature persons we become. Christ, in other words, had a divine nature. He also had a divine personality. And thirdly, that this divine person is the golden destiny for which all human persons were made. The feature of including the mystery of the incarnation in personality development should be specially emphasized. This is the role of Christ as our personal Savior, whom we need to save us from the ravaging effects of what faith tells us is original sin. What does this mean in personality development? It means that a teacher or trainer recognizes that he has two tasks in helping others develop a mature personality. First, they must grow in the practice of virtue after the example of Christ. And second, they must struggle and be prepared to struggle all through life with their native tendencies towards evil. Unlike Christ, we have a fallen human nature. He didn't. We therefore need grace that comes from Christ. Otherwise, we are helpless in fighting against the world, the flesh, and the devil. And we are finally ready to come to talk about the mystery of the church. This is the capstone to a truly Christian concept of personality and gives the effective means of growing in personal maturity. What does it mean? It means that as Christianity understands the human person, he or she is not to be alone, live alone, or work out his happiness, even in this life, in solitude. As you can see so far, we have talked about personality development as though each human being lived in isolation from other human beings. But that is not the case. Personality development should mean development of the sanctifying grace that each person has, which I repeat, I think, for the fifth time, is different, distinctive, and unique in each one of us. And that in training others, we deal with each person as different. different not only naturally, but different supernaturally. Just as each of us had a different soul infused when we were conceived, so we had different sanctifying grace infused when we were regenerated in baptism. However, personality development means not only developing each person's distinctive sanctifying grace, but developing each person's supernatural life, which is meant to be lived out not alone, but in a community. What does the mystery of the church teach us? It teaches that a human being's highest fulfillment consists not in living alone, not in living for oneself alone, but our highest fulfillment consists for each person in giving himself to the service of other persons. That this corporate and cooperative service, animated by the love of God, is what constitutes the church, of which Christ is the animating principle and his sacraments are the means of sustaining its life. Let me repeat. The development of each human being as a person means, first of all, taking stock of each person as a different individual. But personality development is not only to develop the individual qua individual. And remember, two words you should always, for the rest of your lives, keep together. Personality means individuality. We are talking about development, training for maturity. To mature means to grow. How do we help people grow? Grow as what? Grow as individuals twice over. As natural persons whose soul is different from everyone else's, and whose life of grace is different from everyone else. However, the maturation or development of which we are talking is not only of the individual developing his or her native, personal, distinctive, unique powers, but by divine grace and through the incarnation, we are enabled to develop human persons elevated by grace to give themselves to others. You might almost say that this is a good, simple definition for supernatural personality development. When does a human being develop supernaturally as a person? When and insofar as that individual is enabled to live with others, to live for others, and to give oneself to others. The consequences here in the training or education of a religious personality are staggering. If our personality develops ultimately by the practice of that charity which Christ came on earth to practice and proclaim, and we repeat, if as Catholics we believe that our personality finally develops by the practice of that charity which God became man to teach us and show us, then the conditions for the practice of Christian charity are the conditions for growing in supernatural personal maturity. In the last analysis, how does a human being grow spiritually? A human being grows spiritually by developing his practice of Christian charity. We talked so far about what personality development or helping people develop as individuals, which everybody wants to do, all books in psychology recommend, and especially in our democratic United States, it is almost built into our spiritual life, that we don't become just, you might say, robots or mannequins pushed around, that we remain and we develop as persons. Amen. And the Catholic Church buys that. In other words, there is nothing inconsistent or incompatible with our democratic way of life, our preoccupation with individualism, and the spiritual life, provided this individualism has been enlightened by divine revelation. How, by revealed standards, does a human being, practically speaking, best and most effectively grow as a person? Revelation tells us a person best and most effectively grows as a person by growing in the practice of charity. The conditions, as we know, for growing in Christian charity are extreme. The conditions for growing in Christian charity, which is the precondition for becoming a spiritually mature person, the first is self-denial. But notice, that word self, before the hyphen, at least in my word, self-denial, denial. That self does not mean the denial of my individuality. I remain a person. I remain myself. I remain in all that be so far stands. We remain separate. We remain different. We remain distinctive. We remain autonomous. And we sure remain unique. But this self, on the teaching of Christ, must be denied in everything which is in conflict with Christ's teaching on charity. You might say that the growth of the self has a large, spacious territory within which to move. But there are boundaries to this self. The self must be so trained that it denies to itself, gives up, surrenders, lets go of everything of the self which is in conflict with Christ's teaching on love. I could now begin giving not just the rest of this lecture. I could begin giving a whole course. We are to love as individuals. We are to love as persons. But, and if it sounds like a contradiction, that's what Christianity is all about. It's full of paradoxes, which to the eye of reason seem to be contradictions. We love as individuals. We love as persons. But we are to love, and we are to be trained to love as selfless individuals, selfless persons. In other words, the ABCs of supernatural personality development is finding out in myself, and I allow myself to be helped by others to find out what are my sinful, selfish tendencies. And I shouldn't hide behind the mask of saying I want to be myself. My dear, nobody is out to destroy your personality. All I can do is repeat in the time at our disposal. We read St. Paul, what he tells about one side of me. It's the same Paul. One side of me that is forever hankering after what's wrong, what the mind says he should not desire, and the other, loving the things of God. Very well. The personality is to be so developed that it first of all finds out what is selfish. Just to illustrate what a job there is as the, you might say, the kindergarten or at most the grammar school education in personality development. Find out, and each person's tendencies are different. What is selfish about me? How do I fail in loving. Not myself. It's nobody else to teach me, but others. I have here the American Heritage Dictionary, which, as you know, is not the unabridged, which contains all the possible words. Self. Self-abuse. Self-aggrandizement. Self-appointed. Self-assertion. Self-centered. Self-colored. Self-content. Self-deceived. Self-driven. Self-imposed. For many people, and Immanuel Kant, the great and most influential philosopher in the Western world, says the human conscience is what each person's will tells that individual he wants to obey. That's the modern world's definition of conscience. Self-indulgence, self-interest, selfish, self-love, self-propelled, self-righteous, self-satisfaction, self-seeking, and so it goes on and on and on. Are we clear? So Christ's teaching about self-denial does not mean that we are to deny that we are individuals, but that we are individuals who remain ourselves, but discover in ourselves what sinfully selfish tendencies we've got. Second, the conditions for personality maturity on revealed grounds require self-denial and, secondly, generosity. Either a religious estranged from the first day in religious life, in generosity, in giving, in sharing, or the more you try to develop that person's individual, the more self-conceited, self-asserted, and selfish person you are cultivating. In other words, there are two levels to this pedagogy and personality development. The first is negative. Basically, it's eradication. First, find out what's in me that is selfish. And secondly, that I am trained to go out to others. I have known people 30, 40 years in the religious life who are models of charity. Well, not quite. And it takes sometimes years of knowing the person to discover, you know what some people will never really share is their thoughts. Now, of course, we've got to be judicious and prudent. That doesn't mean saying everything, telling everyone what's in our minds. But the most fundamental form of generosity is a sharing of my spirit. It is Christ's own definition, remember? You are no longer strangers to me or servants. You are my friends. Why? Because whatever, get it? Whatever I have learned from my Father, I have shared with you. There is a very disturbing passage in the writings of Don Luigi Guanella, about whom I spoke during the retreat in Christmas week. He warns superiors, watch, beware of the quiet, silent person who very seldom talks. And he explains, maybe the person is so recollected and lost in God that mundane conversation is practiced only when real charity requires. Or maybe, and more likely, the person is lost in himself. So generosity. Generosity with time, with my convenience. Generosity with what I have. Material things I possess. Generosity with my talents, with my skill. And as I've been telling Jesuit scholastics for 20 years, when they come to me exhausted, they would tell me, do you know that I've been in school already 22 years? I'm sick and tired of any more studies. Sit down. Then we talk. Let me tell you, the real reason why you're being subjected to all the torment of classwork, listening to boring lectures by the hour, is because the more you know, the more you can share. This is worth the whole course, what I'm telling you. The most important form of generosity in which young religious are to be trained is the generosity of sharing themselves. What they have in their minds, what they have in their wills, in other words, sharing their spirits. we go on. We are talking about the conditions for developing the human person supernaturally, and that the person is best developed practically by being trained in the practice of charity. And we've said the first condition for being trained in the practice of charity is to discover one's selfish tendencies and cope with them, try to overcome them, and be trained in generosity to share with others. I cannot begin to tell you how important, indispensable, is training in spiritual conversation is in the spiritual life. No wonder so many people find community life boring. They've never been trained to share themselves. We go on. In order to practice this kind of charity without which there is no personality development worthy of the name, we require much divine assistance. This, be it said, is the main reason why we receive the sacraments. If the most important commandment that Christ gave us is to love, then the most important grace we need from the sacraments is the grace to be able to love. To love wisely and to love generously. We need help from the sacraments. We need help from prayer. Prayer in what way? Always asking the Lord, Lord, help me. Help me in what? Help me to see how selfish I am and overcome my selfishness. And to see what other people need so I can meet their needs. And that in one not too long sentence is a summary of Christianity. The principal object of our prayer should be to enlighten us about what's wrong with us, what we need to overcome, and to struggle to our dying, not just day, but dying moment, with all those manifestations of self to which each one of us is prone from the moment we are born. It has been, since my novitiate, the principal thing that I check myself on every night. And secondly, to discover from God in prayer what other people need that I can meet. Find a need and fill it. Whose need? Everyone's whom God puts into my life. There is no more important statement in the spiritual life. The only reason why God puts anyone into my life. If only for a moment, or as in a community for a lifetime, is that I might recognize what needs people have and fill them. And if she lacks something that she obviously needs, and I don't have it myself, well, I'm to get busy acquiring it myself so I can begin sharing it with her. That, as I've been telling my students over the years, is the purpose, or should be, of all education. To acquire so I might be able to give. To learn so I might be able to teach. To obtain so I might be able to share. For that we need grace. For that we need prayer. Prayer to ask the Lord, Lord, what's wrong with me that I need to reform? And what's wrong with me will always be my selfishness. And secondly, and positively, what do the people whose lives I have entered need that I can give them? Human nature is so shrewd, it will even avoid certain people, because the moment I meet them, I realize what they need is what I could give, but I am not loving enough to share. Again, this training of the personality in the practice of Christian charity means that I have the mutual support and encouragement of like-minded persons among whom I live. There are three things, therefore, I need from the outside in order to develop my personality as Christ, who came into the world to make me selfless, wants me to be. They are the sacraments, prayer, and people. What kind of people? I need selfless people to give me the support I need for my struggling efforts against my own selfishness. I know much more than I could possibly tell you. I've dealt with too many souls, have been too long a priest and a religious, not to know the devastating effects on even the most generous soul in the religious life, unless the people around them give them support, encouragement in their practice of charity. Nothing freezes charity more surely than the bad example of selfish people. Where I have to struggle with myself to be able to convince myself that I'm still sane. Why should I keep giving and giving? when everyone around me seems only to be taking. We were concluding by pointing out that in helping others to develop their personalities in the religious life, we cannot depend on modern either psychology or the social sciences. They can be useful, but our faith goes way beyond the natural sciences of psychology or sociology. What especially is missing simply not in, no matter how learned the sciences may be, of psychology and sociology? There were especially three things that are missing. First, the recognition of the existence of divine grace. By definition, the natural sciences are not, as we might say, supernatural sciences. So that in terms of personality development, their concept of what a person is and what development should be is at best limited to human reason and human experience. It does not draw on the light of divine faith. It knows nothing, natural science knows nothing of the fact that man was elevated to a supernatural destiny and that he is now not only a human being, but in the profoundest sense, a superhuman being. That's the first thing that is simply missing from the natural, psychological, and social sciences. The second is the recognition of the existence of the church. What has that got to do with personality development? Well, everything. Because, as we concluded last time, as Christianity understands the development of a person, we become more mature as we become more like Christ, who wants us to imitate him in loving others as he has loved us. Personality development, therefore, from the viewpoint of revelation, implies that we are developing as social beings, and not merely as social beings in a natural society, whether the family or the state or all the thousands of groups and organizations to which human beings belong. Our personality develops insofar as we become more perfect members of Christ's mystical body. Immediately we see that for Christian personality development, we need the church. We need other people who share our faith, who will help us become better members of the mystical body of Christ. Again, personality development, once you recognize the church's existence, means that I most develop my personality as I am more zealous in extending the kingdom of Christ on earth. A fully developed person by Christian standards is an apostolic person, a zealous person, a person who is inspired with a mission that Christ had to bring the knowledge and love of God into the minds and hearts of other people.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.